Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
Would you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
I bought a hot shot jet from an old man in Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the bone and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And yep, but you ask cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Don't you know about the ways on the underside?
What do you know?
One hot shot cat from a North Bank Guinea.
What do you know?
Ain't it up with your ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Dropping bombs from above cut you all down to size.
What do you know?
Cause the hip to the ball and the hip to the
what do you know?
Yeah, the streets rose in two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you
it's
know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
One hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
All right, we ain't got time for all that. Hello, and welcome to Logicast. Darby, can you hear me? I'm having some issues with my microphone.
Yeah, I can.
Am I loud?
No, you sound normal.
That was okay. Loud. There's some feedback going on. You need to get out of track. Bad.
Yes, I will.
All right. Hello, and welcome to Logicast. Your host, Darby Macy and Jared Smith. Logicast is a weekly podcast that airs every Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We cover topics like religion, history, philosophy, science, skepticism, politics, and economics. Check us out on the Book of Faces. Logicast. Okay, so we are going to be joined tonight by Luna Lindsay and David Fitzgerald. We are going to talk about Mormonism.
Yay.
I'm very excited. I hope you're excited.
I am.
Well, I know you are. I'm like the only person in this conversation that doesn't have like just a whole like a large amount of in-depth experience in Mormonism. I kind of feel like I'm the outsider. Like I hope. That's kind of the idea. Did you drop the call, Darby?
What?
Are you there? Can you not hear me?
I'm here. No, I can hear you. Okay.
Okay. I can't tell if there's a lag or what. We have a storm brewing. I live in a shitty part of Texas. Anytime there's a storm, for whatever reason, the internet starts acting up. I don't know.
You are cutting out very occasionally, but I can't tell if that's you know, that happens to me on Skype and on the phone, so I don't know if it's me or you.
Yeah, hopefully it's not me. But anyway, you never know. Okay, yeah, Luna said that I was breaking up for her a great deal. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm actually...
Jared. Oh, dear.
Hold on.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Hold on. I'm actually calling in on my phone. Okay, there we go. There I am.
All right.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you very well now.
All right, hold on. I got to mute. It's really weird because I could hear myself in the background. Hold on. Okay, there we go. All right, so we're good? You can hear me okay?
Yep, you sound good to me.
Okay, good. It's really amazing that, you know, sort of this $200 microphone that I'm staring at is actually less effective than my cell phone. It actually makes me a little bit sad. Shitty microphone.
Yeah.
Okay. hey, man, Apple kind of, you know, Apple and, you know, sort of, you know, Samsung have perfected this whole deal. So, you know. All right. So before we get to sort of introducing Luna and David, there's something I want to talk to you about real quick because it really pissed me off. And I know I want to give them more than enough time to talk, but I got to talk about this because otherwise I'm going to forget by next week. So I ran into an anti-vaxxer today. I know that sounds crazy to you, probably. And this person actually told me that she was pro-choice, not anti-vax. But she spent, like, the majority of the conversation trying to explain why people shouldn't vaccinate their kids. So I'm going to kind of read this to you, like, what I said to her, just because I got to get off my chest.
Okay.
Is that okay? It'll take, like, 2 minutes. All right.
Okay.
She said, I'm not anti-vax, I'm pro-choice. So as I said, pro-choice is about personal bodily autonomy. When you have control over someone else's body, you're removing their right to make that decision for themselves. In the case of children, we recognize that they don't possess the intellectual capacity to make these decisions. Similarly, we recognize that sometimes parents don't either, the anti-vaccine crowd being the perfect example. Okay, so now what? We can't depend on the parents to make evidence-based decisions. The child can't make evidence-based decisions. Yet, if the child isn't vaccinated, he or she possesses a danger to infants who have yet to be vaccinated and infants/toddlers who can't be, whether it's because of allergies or cancer, autoimmune disorders, etc. So now, the parents of the unvaccinated child are making decisions for children who can't be vaccinated. The right for both the unvaccinated child and the child who can't receive vaccinations is worth a lot more to us as a society in terms of medical health, financial cost, and moral duty than a parent's right to ignore reality and evidence-based medicine. Mandatory vaccines are necessary because we have an obligation to protect those kids. Your freedom to believe what you want ends the moment that belief harms others, and that especially includes protecting children from the harmful beliefs of their parents. That's it. That's what I said.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. I keep hearing it.
Hang on. My microphone's not working, so I just decided to drop my phone. Like, you know, mic drop? That was the whole idea with that.
I get it.
So, okay. All right, I'm going to unmute these people. Okay.
Okay, great.
This is Luna. Okay. Hey, Luna.
Hello. Nice to talk to you again.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. I'm doing really good. Okay, so I got to introduce you. So Luna was born into the LDS Church. She left the faith in 2001 at age 26. She now lives in Seattle, writes about, you know, sort of like psychology and mind control, culture, and autism. She also writes science fiction and fantasy novels.
Yep.
She has a large family, and... yeah, when she's not busy traveling to, you know, sort of improbable worlds, that's kind of what she's doing.
Yep, that's
did
what
I'm doing. Did I sum that up? I stole that straight from your Amazon page, by the way, because it sort of summarized who you are so well.
Yes, thank you. That sounded familiar.
I wanted to know, like, do you write that?
Yeah.
Okay.
They make us writers usually write, though. It kind of depends. If you have a publisher, sometimes they'll get a copywriter to do that, but... I think most writers end up writing at least a few biographies for one reason or another at some point. So, and we complain about having to do it a lot too. So,
I got you. See, if it were me, then I would be like, you know, Jared Smith is a you know, sort of a dick, and you know, He really doesn't like people, and he wrote this book, and if you don't like it, then fuck you.
You've encapsulated exactly the difficulty that we have in writing our own biographies, yes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Never easy.
I'm gonna bring on David.
It's Gerald.
I'm unmuted. Hello.
You're unmuted. How's it going, David?
Not too bad. So Texas is getting hit by a windstorm, is that what I heard you say?
We're getting hit by a storm, and there's winds in the storm. I don't know if you would call that a windstorm.
Well, that's where the problem with the reception is coming in.
Yes, yeah. Every single time there is like even a mild storm here, all communications just completely cease. And, you know, I guess it just sort of takes Texans back, like, you know, to the dark ages, like 50 years ago. So, you know, I mean.
We have that same problem here in Seattle, by the way, in high-tech Seattle. Yeah, it just takes a little bit of wind or ice and we're done.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lily, for just shitting all over my joke. Completely crapped on it. Like I've been working on that for like the past 5 minutes, you know, and you completely ruined it. Really appreciate that. Okay, so David Fitzgerald is an atheist activist. He's a historical researcher. He's a writer and a national public speaker. David is co-founder and director of the world's first atheist film festival and San Francisco's oldest annual Darwin Day celebration, Evolution Palooza. Dude, I always crack up when I read that out loud. Like, so where are you going? You know, I'm going to Evolution Palooza. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, I don't know. Go, the name is. You know. David authored Nailed: 10 Christian Myths That Show Jesus Never Existed at All, and The Complete Heretic's Guide to Western Religion, chapter one, part one, The Mormons.
Yeah.
And by the way, David, Darby told me not to say this, but I don't care. I swear to fucking God, dude, if someone calls me a religious apologist again because I disagree with mysticism, like, I am driving to California and I am going to take a huge, giant shit on your front lawn. Like, I'm not even kidding.
The reason I told him not to say that, because, of course, I get the same thing, is because that's not your fault. It really has nothing to do with you. You're not telling people. Everyone who disagrees with me is a religious apologist, so it seems kind of like that.
Thank you. Thank you.
I guess he wants to complain to somebody, so maybe he'll.
And you know what's a really sad thing about the whole Jesus historicity argument is, even though I've spent the last 15 years of my life about it, it's not that important. It really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. It's fascinating, don't get me wrong, but.
No, it's interesting.
Out about that,
no, we've said the same thing. It doesn't mean much as far as the divinity claims, and you've said that, and so have we, and we totally agree on it. But it just keeps coming up. So
anyway,
you know, Tracy Harris. Sorry, guys,
there's
going to be a bit of a delay here. So I mean, if we interrupt each other, then I guarantee everyone that it's not intentional. Tracy Harris actually summed this up really, really well the other day. What she said was that it's irrelevant to have this conversation with Christians because the Jesus that they believe in is so far from, you know, the historical conversations that happen among New Testament and early Christian scholars that indeed it's almost irrelevant to talk to them about it. And I've always said that people who believe in an, you know, all-powerful, all-knowing deity that they have to have faith in, they're not going to give a shit if Jesus did or didn't exist. Like, they're going to continue to believe it just like they believe the larger claim about his dad, who's really himself. So,
absolutely.
Right.
You know.
And it's almost more persuasive to talk about, you know, to acknowledge Jesus, yes, he did exist, but what we have is evidence that the Gospels were written at least 180 years after he died. Therefore, maybe he lived or maybe he didn't, but stuff in the Gospels says things that maybe Jesus didn't really say. I think that's a more persuasive argument anyway if you're talking to religious people. So,
well, Robert Price put it best. He said, for all extents and purposes, even if there was a Jesus, there isn't one anymore because everything we know about that guy is totally unrelated to anybody who may have lived in the first century.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
And I mean, that seems to be a point of agreement in a lot of these conversations, because the historical argument is so limited. It doesn't really say anything about him as a person or anything else. It's just this tiny chunk of probably this guy, probably crucified by the Romans. And after that, it's everything else. It's the bulk of the Christian argument. So he's right. Price is right.
Yeah.
The press is right.
Yeah. Price
I
is
would
right.
agree. And,
that was unintentional. I'm really sorry about it.
Well, you know, not to coin a phrase, but I will say something that I, David, no offense, but, you know, Price is wrong, bitch.
I was right about that.
he was right about that. I Robert Price is obviously a brilliant man. Anyway.
Unless you start talking about climate change denial, then it's a whole different thing.
Yeah. You know, I read that guy's Facebook. He's you can definitely tell he works in Mississippi, doesn't he?
Somewhere in the Mideast, the horrible Mideast. Midwest,
oh,
rather.
I thought he worked in Mississippi, does he not?
I think he's from Mississippi.
Let me put it this way. You can tell he's from Mississippi given his political positions. So
right,
you know.
Right. Say no more. Say no
mean,
more.
Yeah, doesn't mean that he's you know wrong about the other stuff. But anyway, all right. So, which is actually a really good segue into Mormonism. By the way, I do want to point out that Jesus is the only religious figure that I've actually ever defended. I just want to say that because I think that it's important.
Yeah,
well,
except
you don't
really
defend him as a religious figure. Yeah, let me put it this way. He's the only psychotic, you know, sort of probably psychotic, or at least apocalyptic, you know, rabbi who was running around first century Galilee that I've ever felt the need to defend. So, you know, that might be an internal problem with me. I don't know. All right. Darby, I'm going to let... Pretty much, guys, I'm going to be a spectator tonight. I really want to hear you three mostly have the conversation and have discussions. So, Darb, go for it. I'm going to mute this thing.
Well, here's what I think is a good thing to talk about, because all of us have sort of, I mean, there are a lot of people who be interested in Mormon church history on a sort of, you know, intellectual level. A lot of it's fascinating. David, I think you did a great job of going through a lot of that, and some of it's really funny, dude.
Thank you.
You're funny. Yes, I really appreciated that. But one of the things I want to talk about tonight, because a lot of us are going to have missionaries at our door, and probably my favorite part of your book, and Luna addresses this in many ways in hers, is how do you talk to a Mormon? And at the end, you actually do a really cool thing and explain how difficult it is to be a missionary. And I don't just mean like, oh, it's a hard job, but like their life is pretty sucky for the most part. And a lot of people
absolutely.
Think, oh, I'll just make fun of them when they get to the door, and that'll show them. Well, that lacks several things besides empathy and compassion. You're not actually, you know, addressing any of their points. If you just ridicule the whole thing whole hog, you're not, all you're doing, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, Luna, is reinforcing a very particular persecution complex that the Mormons have cultivated culturally. And so you're kind of reinforcing
you're entrenching
their belief.
Them. Yeah, you're helping them entrench for sure. Yeah, because they set that up ahead of time. I mean, they do create a persecution complex so that any kind of evidence at all, any mocking or slight sneer or any kind of evidence for that, they're going to call that even criticism. Like my book has been referred to as persecution, right? So that's just going to play right into their hands, and their defenses are going to go up really, really fast. That is definitely the only reason to take that approach is if you just want to mess with them or you want to be mean to them, or it's not compassionate of an approach, nor is it helpful.
So I want to talk, because you guys kind of both, like Luna has, you know, grown up in this and done a ton of research on it. And David, you have a great thing in the end of your book about how to sort of approach this with people. And I would like to sort of talk to people so they know how to talk to missionaries when they come to their, I mean, that's not the only thing I want to talk about, but I think we should start there. Do you know what I mean? I think there
great
are
idea.
Ways to approach this. Some of these people are doubting. We know, because if you go into exmormon.org, there are huge testimonials of missionaries who were losing their faith in the middle of their mission. And, I mean, it happens, you know. And so I've actually never been mean. I'm always happy to see more missionaries, but probably not for the reason that people think, you know. But I've never once been mean to him. I know that your life is, you know, lonely and isolated, and if you don't like your missionary partner, you're in big trouble because you can't ever get away from them, you know, unless you get whipped in the middle. And, I mean, that kind of stuff is a lot for a 19-year-old boy, or increasingly there are more women happening, but you know what I'm saying. So do you guys mind talking about that for a little bit?
No,
sure,
never.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, personally, if you want me to jump in, when the missionaries come to my door, I kind of, and by the way, I was blacklisted for a while, and then, but because I resigned and asked them not to contact me, but I've moved a couple of times since, so I now get the random stray missionaries, not the one who are intentionally seeking me out to bring me back, right? So I get those ones.
Right.
And I'm always, you know what, if they offer service and I'm in the middle of doing something, I take them up on that offer because it gives them a break from their normal kind of trudging door to door. If they don't offer service, they don't usually. So, and I don't usually have anything for them to do anyway. But I let them know straight up. I tell them, look, I'm an ex-Mormon, and if I have time, I invite them in. And if I'm in the mood to, debate religion with them, you know, if I'm in the mood to talk about it with them, then I will. Otherwise, I'll just let them know up front, look, I'm not in the mood to talk about Mormonism. I am an ex-Mormon, but if you want to come in, and I'll give you a drink, if you want some water or some juice or something, and we can just, you know, tell me about your day. And because I want to give them a rest from their, you know, just a 15-minute chance to sit down with someone who's friendly to them. So that's my policy.
I think that's an awesome policy.
It's incessant. They get no break. It's nice to give them a break. Yeah,
right. And that's going to make a bigger impression on them than anything else in those 2 years is the one person who was nice to me, you know.
Yes.
Than all
and the ex-Mormon.
The mean from me. Yeah. And
yeah,
that's true.
And ex-Mormon. I'm not the evil Satan that they've been told that I'm supposed to be. The bitter, you know, angry, all that. Yeah.
Anytime you get a believer and an atheist having any kind of conversation like that, any kind of interaction like that, it's always a win for us, no matter how the talk goes, if nothing else, because it breaks those stereotypes that they've been force-fed all their lives about how atheists are these big, evil, hurt, you know, hateful, unhappy, miserable people. And when they see this is a cool person, when they see for themselves, it's like that's a huge argument against religion right there.
It is.
Well, against the false claims of religion, certainly. And, I mean, I usually tell them when they come to the door, I'm sure they're probably confused because I am kind of happy to see them. But I always tell them I'm a non-believer and I grew up in Utah and I actually know a lot about your faith. So I'm happy to talk to you if you'd like. And usually they exhale a little bit because they're still on guard because I've told them they kind of have to be, right? Because I'm sure they get abused all the time from people. And I usually tell them, like, you know, I know the stories and whatever, but if you want to talk to me, I'm happy to talk to you, but I'm going to ask you some questions if that's okay. And of course they always say yes. Usually I just wait for them to sort of finish their spiel, which they do anyway. And often what I ask is, I generally start with one and don't get to other ones because I don't often get an answer to this, but I usually ask it nicely enough that they don't freak out because I'm not actually trying to make them uncomfortable. I mean, I'm trying to make them a little bit intellectually uncomfortable, but not in front of me, you know, I don't want to talk them out. So I usually talk to them about, you know, I know the church has had for a long time people that are sort of looking for Semitic DNA and Native American populations, and they've really had trouble finding that. Like, what do you guys think about that? And I usually phrase it that way instead of saying, obviously they failed because that's just bullshit, you know, which is, it's a silly story. But I don't think people are silly for believing it because the indoctrination, as Luna has written about in great detail, is extreme and comprehensive when you come from that family. And so I've actually, most of the young, it's all been young men that have come to my house. Most of them don't even know what I'm talking about. But I actually had one that did. And he was like, wow, I know the answer to that. And I was like, really? Great, tell me. And apparently somebody dug up some unknown origin. Luna, I don't know if either of you know about this, but it was some group on the Yucatan, the group X, something or other. I mean, it was a total straw to be grasped at.
Right.
And I'd never heard of it before, and I was like, how interesting, can you tell me about that? And he really couldn't, because I think what had happened is he'd run into this before, and that had been given as a short answer, and he felt much better. And I said, oh, that's okay, you don't have to tell me, I can look it up, but thanks for answering my question. And then I let them go, you know. And so, I don't know, I don't expect other people to ask that. That's just one of the ones that I always find most, I just find that fascinating. This is, there's so many sort of dead-end claims in the church about archaeology and North American history and everything.
Especially
else.
Especially archaeology, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they really are in trouble on that one, and I'm amazed that they continue to try to spin. I guess they don't have a choice, but. Luna, have you ever tried to talk to anybody about that? I just wondered. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Darby. Can everybody hear me okay? David, I wanted to ask you this question real quick. So how exactly is it that the transition between Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, like, can you kind of go over that? Because that's something I've always wanted to know.
Okay. You broke up a little bit. You're saying the transition of power from Joseph Smith to Brigham Young?
Yeah, both of you guys wrote about that. Yeah, there's an interesting story there. Go for it.
There is. Yeah, actually, after Joseph Smith died, there was actually a huge shakeup, and there was a succession war between all these different rival factions, like Sidney Rigdon, like the Strangites, and Brigham Young. Brigham Young won out, but only after Joseph Smith's brother, Samuel, died under mysterious circumstances, i.e. poison, cough, poison. And that story is fascinating, too, and the repercussions of that succession war are still being fought today amongst all these other Mormon spinoff groups that still don't get along. So it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, well, what's
the party line on that? I wonder how does the church talk about that? Do they just not talk about it?
Yeah, I can answer that, because that was one of the things that I actually learned from reading David's book that I hadn't known before, was how that transition occurred. So I was raised, we basically knew about the SLDS, those evil, bad SLDS polygamists, and then there was the reorganized church, right? And we had these sort of, like, semi-warm feelings towards them, as if sort of like they were just grossly misled, but they were still really, really, really super wrong. An apostate, but they're kind of like us a little bit. We mostly ignored each other. But the story that we learned was that it was pretty simple. There was Emma Smith and one of the other Smith brothers and a couple of the apostles, like maybe Sidney Rigdon, I can't remember all of them, but they were really wanting Joseph Smith's son to take over this sort of monarchy kind of lineage transfer power. And of course, that wasn't God's way. God had made it really super clear that there would be, that the 12 apostles would do basically what they do now, which is supposedly now, which is get together and pray about it and feel the Spirit and then have God tell them who it will be. And that's really the right way to do it. And that's what they did. And God wanted it to be Brigham Young. And so obviously, because we are the biggest church, that was the right way or something. I don't know. That's what I had always heard. And since leaving, I've never read anything that countered that story. So to hear, and I heard about the Strangites about last year or so. It was really cool to hear about them. But to hear that there were so many different schism groups and to hear that that was not quite such a simple story was really kind of cool. So,
yeah.
And fascinating. Yeah, super fascinating.
That's one thing you got to say about Mormonism. No matter what you say about it, it is fascinating. In the book, I call it steampunk Scientology.
That was so funny. It's so true. It's very steampunk Scientology.
Yeah. And what a Scientology. Great, what awesome. Go ahead.
I said it was science. Can you guys hear me okay, or is this breaking up?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Okay. What I said was that it was sort of Scientology before it was Scientology. It was just kind of under the guise of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it would make such an awesome mini series on cable to show like the origins of the Book of Mormon and the church.
Yes.
Like the first 20 years or so. It would be awesome. Full of sex.
David, tell everybody that story about the creepy king of the island in Lake Michigan or whatever it is. That one, I actually laughed out loud at that. I know I sent you a message saying, like, this is totally hilarious. Who was that guy again? You got to remind me.
He was the Strangeites, and his name, let me, if it was, I want to say William Strange. Hang on a second. I got it right here.
Jonathan, something like that.
James Strang. And what he did, it's pure genius. After the Succession War got, came out, he forged his own Book of Mormon type book. It was an actual metal book written in plates that he'd gotten from a copper tea kettle that he'd taken apart and etched on and buried under a tree. And the whole story how they did that was fascinating too. But he claimed to find he called the Vori plates of Raja Manchu of Burrito. Still have pictures of these plates, which killed me. And there are magical Martian writing on there. It's just, you can't make this stuff up. It's just so perfect.
And
of course, you can sell it to hundreds of thousands of people.
You can make it up, and Joseph did it, and so they all thought, well, if he can do that, then I can do it too, you know, so why not have a go and see if it works out, you know?
And that was one of the biggest surprises when I was researching the book, is it wasn't just Brigham Young, it wasn't just Joseph Smith, there were all these, this whole rogues gallery of these total bastards who were just sociopaths, and, I mean, Dr. Cook and Porter Rockwell and all these guys that were just sociopaths. I mean, just no two ways about it. They just swarmed to this religion like flies on honey.
What I find fascinating too is that whole magical worldview. I haven't read Quinn's book yet, Early Mormonism and the Magical Worldview, but I have a very nice copy of it, so I'll read it someday. I just think it's super fascinating that we don't really understand. Most of us don't understand what the times were like back then. And so when we're Mormons, we're sold this bill of goods that like everyone was these like stately, rational Puritans or something, and that this idea of someone being visited by an angel, well, that was just crazy. That never happened. No one ever. But that's the thing is, it did. It happened all the time. Everybody back in that time had seen a spirit or conversed with an angel or heard the voice of God or had seen strange, you know, lights in the distance, and they were finding all kinds of ancient books all the time and hunting treasure.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was totally normal. And as a person who, I also, one of my other big interests is studying fairy folklore, oddly enough,
and particularly
European and Celtic fairy folklore. So I can see how that culture, you know, because a lot of Americans at that time were a generation or two from Germany, from England, Ireland, they would have brought those fairy myths over. And people think that fairy tales are like, you know, once upon a time. It wasn't. The fairy tales as they were told were, this happened to me. I actually saw a leprechaun. And so it's kind of cool to see that transition and to see that happen. It's fascinating.
And
as a Mormon, I had no idea.
I know, right? And this is the same generation that brought us like Rip Van Winkle story and Ichabod Crane. So they we have no concept of just how steeped in superstition all of this was, all these people.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we also, if I can interject everybody,
yeah.
We also don't have a lot of context about what it means to live in a world where you blame. I mean, you know, if you think about being a person, you know, back even 100 years ago, where you can't explain an eclipse, you can't explain a meteor, you know, I mean, it makes it very, very difficult to understand and comprehend reality. So,
yeah,
you know, like, they're all
supernatural.
So, I mean, you can't – someone put it brilliantly, a historian that I've, you know, had some correspondence with, they couldn't see time. You know, they didn't have a concept.
Say it again, Jaron.
What he said was that they couldn't feel time because they didn't have a concept of time as, like, a numeric – thing like we understand today. So, I mean, even something that simple, you know, that we take for granted was very difficult for earlier people, you know, that they saw superstition as the only way they could explain their world. And it's funny, Luna, you bring up the fact that all these people were like finding ancient books and, you know, and I mean, all of these superstitions kind of being carried over, because to them, I think that was the layperson. Rather, the uneducated persons at the time, the majority of immigrants, were relatively, you know, that was the way that they dealt with reality. So it just makes
yeah.
sense that would translation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your audio
yeah,
is pretty bad, Jared, but I think we got most of that.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
hey, you know what? Can I jump in? I wanted to ask Luna what it was that got her to deconvert from Mormonism.
Everybody asks me that, and my story is either completely uninteresting, or if you're a huge science fiction nerd, then it's really fascinating, but it takes a long time to tell. So the elevator pitch is that while researching artificial intelligence and speculating on what a more intelligent artificial intelligence would be, in other words, someone smarter than us, I wrote this essay of what that being would be like, and then sort of realized that the being I had just described was God. And that God was nothing at all like what the God I had been raised to believe in, nor any God that I'd ever seen described by any religion. So I sort of came to believe that God, there is probably a God, but that it's not going to be any God that goes around revealing things to people or meddling in human affairs or even giving a crap about us. Because why do we give a crap about ants or cows? Like, unless we want to use them or study them, we don't really care. They just exist. We don't raise them up to be to our children or anything like that. That would be weird. So yeah, that's it. That's how I left.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of another thing that I wanted to talk about, because I mean, and this happens with all sorts of people who leave religion. I think I wasn't raised religious, and so I didn't have to break away from anything and flee. And I think a lot of people who are non-religious had to do that, because you have a lot to, you know, sort of climb out of and, you know, unstick. And
yeah.
So sometimes that makes it easier to have compassion for other people who have to do that. But also sometimes it makes it easier to have derision for people who don't. You know,
you know, it's exactly the same if you have been raised in religion, though. It's exactly the same. You have a lot of compassion and you're really sick of some of the arguments, too.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think it's, if you have been religious, I think you can do either way. You can either go, oh, I completely understand why, or you can say, for God's sake, why are you so, like, I left, you leave, you know. But I think when it comes to these sort of high context religions that are like, take over your life, and it's not just Mormonism, you know, I mean, we just saw Scientology seems to be one of them, and there are certain Christian sects that are absolutely like that. It's not so easy. It's not just like not going to church. You kind of have to lift yourself out of your own context. You don't know anything else.
The whole universe.
Brain,
the whole.
Yeah. Whether your brain is already trying to think critically, even though it's being told not to, that's only the first thing. And so it helps to understand that you can't just sit down and have a conversation with an active LDS person for the most part, and especially if they're in the corridor. Because their whole life, I mean, the more, you know, Utah and, sorry if you don't know what that means, Utah and Idaho and, like, Eastern Oregon, you know, I know all you do, but people listening may not, where you're really surrounded by it, culturally speaking, but also you're steeped in it in your family. You can't just talk to somebody and say, A, B, and C doesn't make sense. You may cause these gongs of dissonance to go off in their head, and that's good because they might think of them later. But it is not so easy to just sort of lift yourself out. I remember reading, Luna, I think you have a description of, were you trying to drink a cup of tea or something? Like one of the first caffeinated beverages you were trying to sort of, I mean, this is really serious.
That wasn't.
Oh, yeah, you were talking to somebody else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because at that point I actually was drinking tea because I have ADHD, well, actually autistic, but at the time I was diagnosed with ADHD, and it was easier to drink caffeine than Ritalin. And so I just made the decision to rebel against the church or whatever for medicinal purposes. But
okay.
I hear that story a lot. I do hear the story that you're telling right now is fairly common among ex-Mormons, that sort of that first sip of alcohol or that first sip of coffee. And I tried alcohol a few years before I left. And yeah, it was very, it was strangely exciting, but also like, oh my God, am I going to go to hell for this? Or, you know, it was very kind of thrilling and scary at the same time. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just every facet of your life. And David describes this young woman who was an active Mormon in high school, and her life is entirely about church activities or family home evening or family home evening and then seminary the next morning and then taking your sisters to church activities. And they just
sun up
you
to sundown.
I mean, it's pretty totalitarian in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that there are plenty of other cults that do the same thing, that Scientology seems to want to do that. A couple of the other ones that I saw a good documentary about them on Netflix not long ago, which I wish I could remember the name of, but that seems to be a common theme. There's this sort of, you know, if you don't have time to question, how can you question?
I did the math on the number of hours.
All right, wait. Luna, Luna, then David.
And then we both immediately start talking right now.
All right, I'll go.
Luna, you go.
Yeah, I did the math on the number of hours the average Mormon spends, and I also put it up on a forum and got, you know, people to, you know, kind of confer, and so we kind of came up with this consensus. But the average Mormon, assuming you don't have any extra difficult callings, that they spend is 22 hours per week. And that's if you're not a teenager and you're not something like a bishop. So 22 hours a week.
Right.
Yeah. And I break it down in my book as to what those hours are actually spent doing. So.
And if you're a teenager, to be clear, it's more, right?
It's
usually
definitely more.
More.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah.
Because they really want to keep those under control.
Yeah. And I was going to say, the ironic thing about the missionary program is it's not successful because they're bringing more people into the church. It's successful because it keeps college-aged Mormons invested in their religion. Instead of going out into college and experimenting with sex and drugs, they're doubling down. They're mowing the lawns and babysitting so they can save up enough money to put themselves through 2 years of hell in a missionary.
I mean, and you kind of end up with a bunch of sunk cost feelings after that, right? Because you put so much time, so much effort,
exactly.
Your family's resources, your family's support, everything.
Yep.
You've got, this can't be wrong because look what I've done and sacrificed to make sure that I'm doing the right thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And all the suffering that they do from jerks like us making fun of them, that just buys into that. That's, well, we're being persecuted, so it must be true, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why it's so important to invite those Mormon missionaries in and be nice to them and not be jerks. Because nothing's scarier to them than to realize, oh, this nice, friendly person has no use for what I'm selling at all. That will
be. Yeah, that's probably.
You know, to be honest, like, just interject here, this whole conversation makes me sad. Like, I mean, it really does. Because you have people whose entire lives are consumed. You know, religion in terms of, like, more moderate forms of Christianity, Americans, like, barely take it seriously. You know, I mean, we do in some, you know, in some instances, like in Indiana and, you know, and obviously in Arkansas, Texas, like down here in the South. But in general, you know, as Bill Maher said, like, Americans have, you know, the sort of the good foresight to kind of brush it the fuck off, you know. I mean, you know, to quote him directly, he said, you know, my neighbor doesn't, like, look over his fence on Sunday, see me mowing the lawn, and be like, I really should kill him.
Right.
So,
it's not happening.
You know, and it doesn't really happen here, but whenever you get inside of you know, these smaller, more radical religions like Mormonism or Scientology, and especially when you start talking about the kind of indoctrination that the children experience, and then the way that it translates into their adult life, I mean, it makes it very sad because, like, these kids never had an opportunity or never granted an opportunity to live a normal life and to be able to choose for themselves whether they did or didn't want to follow this religion. I mean, it just makes me really sad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it is
the
sad.
Is
it's heartbreaking.
The hole is so small, right? I mean, Luna, you talk about this, that there's only one really narrow way to go, and so many people don't fit in to that way. And so you have to do these terrible contortions and denials of yourself just to try to fit in there. And the Mormons have a thing that I think is kind of unique in that they are kind of compelled to be happy all the time, seem happy all the time. And there's sort of joke about how, it's not funny, it's not a joke, about how much Prozac is being prescribed in Utah, especially to Mormon women. That's not funny, because what you have is, they're not supposed to be going to a therapist. You have to go to your bishop. The only person that you can really talk to if it breaks through at all is your doctor.
You can go to a therapist, but typically you're encouraged, quote unquote, to go to an LDS family services therapist who, depending on how liberal they are, may or may not give APA sponsored advice, I guess, on particularly around subjects like masturbation, following the commandments, working too hard, that kind of thing. Where a secular therapist might tell you, hey, it's okay to masturbate, or it's okay to be gay, or, it's okay to chill out a little bit and not freak out all the time and give yourself a rest now and then. But they can get therapy. So.
Right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it sound like no one can go to the therapist. But I think the idea is that you should be able to deal with stuff yourself, though, because, you pray and you do work. You put your nose to the grindstone and you work really hard and, pray more and go to Relief Society more and have some more kids. And, that's like, I know a lot of Mormon women who love their kids a lot. This isn't just some factory thing, but it's a lot of work to have 7 or 8 children. I mean, the families I grew up around, that wasn't unusual at all. We were super weird, because there were only 2 of us for most of my life and then 3, when I was 14, but it was just normal. And then, that's the other thing. If you have your older kids automatically get conscripted just by circumstance to take care of the younger ones. So by the time you get to be a teenager in that large family, you're not just doing all your church obligations and your family obligations. You're also doing childcare obligations. And it sort of, sinks any possibility of an independent thought or action or having friends outside the church. You don't even have time to have friends outside the church. I mean,
And your counsel's not here anyway, so, but you are supposed to have them, but you're not, but you are.
Right. How do you navigate that? I guess you're supposed to have them at a distance so you can talk to them about the truth of the church.
Yeah, they have to have good standards. Like, you have to get friends who have good standards. There's all this pressure to convert people, so of course you have to interact with people outside the church, but then there's also all these other counsel that you should only associate with people who will encourage your standards, and you should avoid the appearance of evil, and it's confusing. So no matter what you choose on that, you're choosing the wrong thing, basically.
Right, and I mean, it's actually, there's this sort of self-correcting thing that the Mormon Church has done, and I know other churches have done it, but this one, I think they're way better at it than most mainstream churches, is that, if it sounds bad about the church, then it's wrong. And they have a really elaborate sort of mythology built up around, if you find something that's making the church look bad, it's because that is wrong. And why are you reading that anyway? That's bad for you to read that, and so you feel shame for even knowing that information now. And then you immediately sort of trained to dismiss it.
And don't start talking about Mormon historians or the September 6th, or idolizing
those
the truth.
People. Yeah. Idolizing the truth. Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah.
So,
Boyd Packer, this apostle, gave this speech that was Orwellian.
That was amazing. Well, and when I lived there, we used to call him E.T. Ezra Taft was in power for a long time. And then he gave some pretty interesting speeches as well about, how to toe the line before he really became so ill that he couldn't do his job. But they're doing this thing recently. I was talking to Luna about it, where the internet, of course, is threatening to sink the church on several levels. And they're doing this interesting thing where they're not publicly, but they're openly introducing these little nuggets of truth. Can you talk about this, Luna? You're going to say it better than I do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, starting, I think it was about last summer, they started putting these lengthy articles up on their website, and they called them Gospel Topics. They're in kind of amongst a bunch of other articles about Gospel Topics, but they're, advanced apologetics. that acknowledge a great deal of the facts that we all know. For instance, the Book of Abraham is a great example. It was one of the first ones they released. You know, just to let your listeners know, there are some historical issues about the LDS claims about the origins of one of their scriptures, the Book of Abraham. And they're pretty damning evidence about the origins of this book. So,
yeah.
Of course,
in that it's complete and utter BS.
It's complete and utter BS. So a lot of Mormons are stumbling upon this on the internet, and there's photographs and undeniable evidence that they can't. And so it's been causing a lot of people to leave the church. So what they did was they wrote these anonymous articles. No one knows their authorship. Someone in the church history department is writing these. And they acknowledge most of the facts, but then kind of spin it with these theoreticals, like, oh, what if Joseph Smith just got this book from the Spirit and he was just sort of using this Egyptian book for the dead for inspiration or something? I don't know. So they kind of flip in these potential cognitive dissonance resolutions, and then let people make up their minds. But the thing is, they're not really advertising these. You can find them if you search through Google, and you can find them if you search on the church's website for specific keywords. But and apparently the bishops are telling people to go to them if people have questions or problems with it. But aside from that, they're not really announcing that these things exist. So they're trying to have the best of all worlds. Here's the challenge. What was that?
Isn't that fascinating? Just
so fascinating.
Being able to play both sides against, you know.
Yeah, because they don't want to challenge people who've never heard of this, right? They don't want them to go, wait,
right.
What? It was the Book of the Dead? I didn't know that. But they want a way to explain it to people who have stumbled on it. So it's weird. I don't know.
It's fascinating. It's just fascinating.
You know what's really interesting, by the way? It's the fact that nobody ever stops, whether it's Mormonism or even Scientology or, you know, or even some versions of Christianity, like, you know, evangelicalism, where nobody ever stops to think that, like, maybe my pastor, priest, maybe the elders, you know, maybe, you know, Tom Cruise, who's at level, you know, 24, maybe they're lying to me because they know that if I continue to believe this, I'll continue to give them money. Like, that's what is so fascinating. They think that these people have all of these answers, and the answers just always so happen to conform to the religious belief. And, you know, now I feel better, and, you know, now it's great. Okay, now I'm going to hand over my money. Like, I'm just amazed that the brainwashing in all of these kind of micro religions, you know, is so extreme that people, normal, rational, intelligent people even, are incapable of seeing these, you know, these obvious contradictions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of them,
I mean,
use the same tricks too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Luna, for example, I mean, did you experience that? Was there ever anyone when you were in the church who, like, brought this up, like, hey, maybe these people aren't telling us the truth? I mean,
never. I mean, we knew that anti-Mormons existed. And of course, this was, you know, the 80s and the 90s. So you had to actually kind of go out of your way to, like, the anti-Mormons either had to pull you into their booth at the county fair, or you had to go out of your way to find one of these books that were floating around, supposedly anti-Mormon books. And so we were warned away from following those and finding them, and we were told that they were full of lies, they were angry, Satan was trying to destroy the church, all kinds of motives for them. So, no one said, what if it's not true? That wasn't a choice. We didn't get to choose that.
Well, not that it's,
well, you're,
not that it's not true,
yeah,
just that nobody is sitting here thinking that maybe, just maybe, we're being told this so we continue to, you know, kind of believe it. I don't know. Maybe, possibly for me, like, I obviously don't, it's hard for me to get back into the mind of being a Christian, because I was a Christian for over 20 years. So it's hard for me to relate to that now. And when I encounter people today who are like, yeah, I need to go talk to my pastor, maybe you should talk to my pastor, you know, the only thing I'm thinking of is, like, well, of course he's not ever going to agree with me, because this has to be true in order for his career to continue to exist. You know,
right.
I mean,
it's very hard,
you know,
to,
like,
get a man to accept an idea when his salary depends on him not understanding an idea.
Mormons have a good answer for that, though. They have lay clergy. There's no bishops don't get money. But here's another lie that Mormons are told is that we're told that none of anybody, no leader in the church ever makes any money at all. And turns out that's not true. Above a certain point,
oh,
you're a general
on.
Authority, they totally pay you. We believe it too. In fact, they still trot that out as, well, we're all pure of heart because we don't even make any money at this.
Which
the
is hilarious.
Don't.
Well, where's the money going then? Yeah, because there's a lot of money. I mean, a ton of cash is like goes into the LDS. So it's like, where is the money going? They're not paying. I run a business.
They're building
so I can
temples.
Tell you that shit, labor is like the most expensive thing. So if they're not paying labor, and you have missionaries who are having to like fund their own missions, you know, and you have bishops and elders who are not being, you know, compensated, where the fuck is all this money going?
they're building temples.
Not going to cure world hunger.
No, they are. They're feeding the world. They're humanitarian efforts, and they're building temples, and they're building temples. They're building churches, and they're helping the poor.
And they're the largest landowner, and they're the largest landowner in Florida right now, aren't they?
Absolutely. Oh, and well, they've got the largest dairy ranch in America too. It's the size of one of our states. I forget. But I mean, they make so much money if they just paid taxes on the non-church ownings they have, like their radio station networks and their insurance and their, you know, their property holdings. It's completely non-church related. We would still be getting so much money from them in taxes.
We could like educate more children.
Billion.
Or we could. Yeah.
A billion, like 10 billion,
billion
like
with a
much?
B.
Well, we could tax billions. I don't know if that we'd get
$10 billion
in revenue, but yeah.
Well, maybe not billions, but I mean, those guys are bringing in billions every year.
Yeah, they are. Just from their investments. Yeah. I'm not too honed in on the financials, but there are ex-Mormons who are total geeks that spend a lot of time looking over the financials and trying to figure it out since it's fairly secretive. And one claim someone made at ex-Mormon conference last year was that within a couple of years, the church is expecting to be able to finance their entire operation just from returns on their investment. Like, that they could go without tithes. Just, no, we don't need your tithes anymore. We're self-sufficient.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the Austins in their book, the Austins said it, as of the mid-90s, they were estimated the annual tithing revenue was between 4.25 and $5.3 billion annually. So who knows what it is now. So I can totally believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. There are people who do those estimates based on the information that we have available. We do have UK tithing information available because it's a law in the UK and other European countries that they report their financials. So that's one source of information, and then people extrapolate from there. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Wow, we're already done. That sucks.
Jesus fucking Christ. Like, I'm... I'm still, like, I'm so, to be honest, like, this entire conversation has upset me. Like, I'm
let me end you on a high note, because there is good news about Mormonism, and that is that they have probably maxed out their population. If it weren't for Mormons having babies, they're not bringing in any new Mormons. So on a massive scale, they're not going to take over the world anytime soon. They're sitting on a shitload of money. But the numbers are about three times inflated from reality of active members compared to what they say it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that is good news. I know they count pretty much everybody they can possibly count. So.
Yeah.
I know that.
They don't count
me
anymore.
I know that. Yeah, sure. So then the conversation becomes whenever they start seeing, you know, I mean, Islam does this shit. Like, people understand this, but I mean, this is a huge push for Muslim couples to continue to have babies to add them to the roles of Islam. I mean, works the exact same way in pretty much, you know, every religion, you know, is that this is, you know, this is the idea. So, you know, I think whenever it's possible, I guess, and you two can comment on this, but whenever they start seeing a drop in, you know, sort of tithing or even in, you know, their roles in terms of attendance, it's easy, you know, that, you know, Joseph Smith, you know, wants you to, you know, start having more children. Right, I mean...
They have that system in place already, so...
right.
Yeah. I mean, they do, yeah.
Yeah. And they'll probably always exist as a subculture for a long time yet. But as far as taking over the world, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, that's a happy note, Emma.
Forgive the statement, but thank God.
I think the internet is going to destroy Mormonism just like it's destroying every other religion out there.
Yeah, or it could force Mormonism to chill out and just relax a little bit. And I would love to see, you know, David, you pointed out that it's an ethnicity, and I still consider myself ethnically Mormon. They could have potential to staunch this bleeding by kind of saying, okay, we're going to drop some of these controlling aspects of our religion. We're going to be kinder and gentler from here on out, and we're going to open our arms a little bit, be a little bit more tolerant of people having various beliefs and having quote-unquote sinful lifestyles. We're going to be tolerant. You're still welcome within our doors. I would love to see a Mormon church like that. So.
All right.
Amen.
Well, guys, we're done. You have been listening to LogicCast. I just want to thank the wonderful Luna Lindsay and David Fitzgerald. Both of you have been great. We really appreciate you guys coming on the show. By the way, I want us to do this again. Like, I want to listen to you two talk again because I learned a shit ton. Hopefully everyone listening learned a shit ton. Darby, did you learn a shit ton? Or am I not allowed
to? Yes, I did.
Okay.
No, you are. You'll upset the missionaries, but I'm happy with it. And I did learn a lot, so thanks you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah,
pleasure.
Very, very much. And yeah, like I said, we're definitely gonna do this again with you two because I think there's a lot more to be said on this topic. And Mormonism is fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
You said it.
All right. You have been listening to LogicCast with your hosts, Jared Smith and Darby Macy. We are on every Thursday at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have been talking to authors David Fitzgerald and Luna Lindsay. Check them out on Amazon. Both are accomplished authors, very well-read, very intelligent people. We will be on next Thursday, I don't know, bitching about something. please tune in. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/LogicCast. And have a good night. David, Luna, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, guys.
All right, thanks.